All right, we got a busy afternoon, so we're going to jump right into securing equal protections under the law. We ended the morning session with a couple of presentations from some dynamic blind women, and we have to begin this afternoon another dynamic woman who is making changes as well. She is not blind, but she is one of those allies that we recognize as truly being blind at heart. She has built a very accomplished career of advocacy and legal work impacting people with disabilities and many others. She brings to life in the law the lived experience of people with disabilities. She, at the end of last year, when our general counsel, Scott Labar, passed away, I asked her if she would take up work as our general counsel, because I knew that she not only had the technical expertise, but she had the understanding deep within herself about who we are, why our movement exists, and what is needed to advance our cause. Law 360 recently named her as one of the titans of the plaintiff's bar for 2023. And in that article, they asked why she was interested in civil rights, and I thought this quote was nice, so I pulled it out. She answered the question by saying, "Injustice makes me mad." She goes on to say, "And civil rights is one of the places where you can actually do something about being angry about injustice." It's truly an honor to have the opportunity to work with her on a regular basis, and many of you have heard me say this before, thank goodness she's on our side. Here from Brown, Goldstein, and Levy is Eve Hill.
Thank you all. Thank you, President Riccobono, for that lovely introduction. I want to start off talking about how honored I am to be the General Counsel of the National Federation of the Blind and to try and follow in the footsteps of the great Scott Labar. I must admit, I knew Scott Labar, I loved Scott Labar, and I am not Scott Labar. But I will try my best every single day to follow in his footsteps. So one of the things President Riccobono suggested I talk to you a little bit about today is to let you get to know me a little bit more. But I hate talking about myself, so I objected. But I agreed to talk about why I'm a disability rights lawyer working for the National Federation of the Blind. The first thing I want to talk about is some things that are not why I'm a disability rights lawyer, but that frame and help me bring perspective to the work that I do for the NFB. My husband uses a wheelchair, and that is not why I'm a disability rights lawyer. I met my husband some 20 years after I became a disability rights lawyer. But the fact that my husband has a disability helps shape my approach to disability rights, and the fact that I believe people with disabilities are their own experts, are their own best representatives, and really get to direct what should happen. In addition, I have my own disability. I have bipolar disorder, and that is not why I'm a disability rights lawyer. I was diagnosed some 10 years after I became a disability rights lawyer, but my own personal lived experience helps frame the way I approach disability rights and how I know that your disability doesn't define you just as my disability does not define me makes the difference in how we approach this work. Now, I grew up poor in rural Maine. And like many kids, I would often stomp my foot and complain that something wasn't fair. And my mother would sigh and say something like, "Life is not fair." And I would scream, "Fix it!" Now, many, maybe most of us, grow out of that kind of tantrum, but not me. Righteous outrage is still my favorite emotion. I still stomp my foot and complain that it's not fair. And so I'm trying to spend some of my time on this planet trying to fix some of the things that aren't fair. And that's why I'm a disability rights lawyer. And that's why the National Federation of the Blind is the best partner imaginable in that effort. I've done a lot of things in the disability rights movement. I've worked for the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division twice, both as a line attorney and as a member of the Obama administration. I ran the Disability Rights Legal Center at Loyola Law School, where I did high-impact disability rights litigation and taught law students to be disability rights lawyers. I started the District of Columbia Government's Office of Disability Rights, working to make the district a model of inclusion of people with disabilities in government services, and I worked for the Burton Blatt Institute at Syracuse University. And in all of these positions, I work to implement disability rights laws, whether by taking on impact litigation, writing a casebook, teaching law students, making city agencies comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, or helping states support employment of people with disabilities in competitive, integrated employment and not sheltered workshops. But now, for the past 6.5 years, I've been in private practice at the fantastic law firm of Brown, Goldstein, and Levy, where I also run the Inclusivity Strategic Consulting Practice and where I'm incredibly honored to serve as general counsel for the National Federation of the Blind. So I wanted to talk about why no other organization is as powerful in securing equal protection of the laws as the NFB and why, as a result, working for the NFB is the culmination of my career as a disability rights lawyer. The NFB has a long history of using and shaping the law to support the equal rights of blind people. NFB founder Jacobus Tenbroek was a leading lawyer and constitutional scholar who helped shape the interpretation of the United States Constitution to protect the rights of the blind. He used the law to demand the full range of rights and responsibilities of citizenship for blind people, and the NFB has been doing the same for over 80 years. Dr. Tenbroek and the NFB envisioned the principles that would eventually become the federal disability civil rights laws that we work under today. And they incorporated those principles into their work long before the ADA was even a dream. And once the law began to reflect an equal rights framework for the blind, the NFB developed a legal program to implement it, shape it, and lead its development in the courts. Dr. Kenneth Jernigan and Dr. Mark Maurer developed what is now the NFB's robust legal program in the 1980s. At first, the legal program was primarily a defense against attacks on the organized blind movement, on the NFB itself, and on its leadership. And then Dr. Maurer hired the great Dan Goldstein. And this deserves applause. My predecessor, mentor, and friend. To take on affirmative challenges to the rights of blind people, including their rights under the Randolph Shepherd Act, their rights to be parents, and their rights to equal right to employment. Now, bear in mind that for the first few years of this program, there was no ADA. So the NFB's legal program had to be creative, using state law, federal law, constitutional law, as well as the expertise of blind people who spoke up for themselves and each other and served as models to teach lawyers, judges, juries, and defendants about blind people. It also took quite a bit of chutzpah to challenge discrimination and support equal rights for people with blind people, for equal rights for blind people before the law was all set up in our favor. Now, the NFB and the legal program in its current form really began around 1999, when Dr. Maurer recognized that the emergence of digital technology offered a tremendous opportunity, but also a huge potential risk for blind people. My friend Dan Goldstein remembers the conversation in which Dr. Maurer noted that in his house, he was able to independently access his thermostat, his kitchen appliances, and everything else he needed to control his environment because everything had a tactile element. But if he moved to a new house, all those things would be digital and controlled by things like touch screens and would be inaccessible to him. Technology that should make life easier and better for blind people was being rolled out without any consideration of the blind, and as a result was making life harder and less accessible. So Dr. Maurer, not one to play small ball, asked Dan to get the attention of the folks developing these emerging technologies. And as a result, the National Federation of the Blind sued America Online, at the time, the biggest player in the internet, challenging their inaccessibility. And they followed that suit with a suit against Diebold, challenging inaccessible ATMs, and a suit against Target for its inaccessible website. And the NFB has led the fight for digital accessibility for nearly 25 years now. The NFB has brought suits challenging Amazon's inaccessible Kindle e-readers, Travelocity, Monster.com, H&R Block, twice, and Scribd, among others. These cases establish the application of the ADA to business websites, educational technology, employment technology, digital books, and other forms of technology. It's fair to say that without the NFB, the internet, and the other digital technologies that are everywhere in our world now would be completely inaccessible to this day. In one of its most significant victories, the NFB in the HathiTrust case also established that making materials accessible for blind people is a fair use under the copyright law. So there is no excuse for the law standing in the way of digital literacy for the blind. And as other disability rights advocates say to me all the time, thank goodness for the NFB. Now, the NFB understood how the ADA should apply to the internet, even though no one had thought about it before, and how it should apply to digital technology. And the NFB's legal program developed the legal framework for applying the ADA to that technology across contexts of employment, education, government services, and public accommodations. And the NFB and its lawyers and members persuaded courts across the country to adopt that legal framework. Since then, under the leadership of President Rick Abono, the NFB legal program has grown. The legal program today takes a strategic approach to making systemic change. It has established priorities of access to digital technology, employment, education, civic participation, healthcare, and the Randolph Shepherd Program. And the NFB's legal program takes on some of the most important legal issues facing blind people, from challenging employment discrimination, to ensuring blind people are not separated from their children, to making electronic books and the internet accessible, to challenging sheltered workshops and subminimum wage, to ensuring new transportation mechanisms work for the blind. And the NFB's legal program takes cases that make a systemic impact and that reach results that create precedents and models that apply far beyond any individual case. Our cases have ripple effects beyond the individual case. The power of the organized blind to make change through legal action has been evident to me in the years I've worked alongside the NFB, including the 6.5 years I've been at BGL. We've advocated successfully for accessible electronic absentee voting in over a dozen states. As a direct result of NFB's work, blind people in Maryland, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Maine, New York, Virginia, North Dakota, Tennessee, Illinois, and very soon Bexar County, Texas, can vote absentee privately and independently. The NFB has established the right to accessible websites for everything from retail stores to fast food to tax preparation to travel to voting to federal government services. We've established the right of blind federal employees to actually enforce their rights under Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act. And we've established the right to have other technologies be accessible as well, from ATMs to kiosks to voting machines to e-book devices to restaurant ordering devices. And we will keep insisting on accessibility of all emerging technologies, including those that use artificial intelligence. We've also fought for the right to have important information communicated in accessible formats, such as Braille, large print, and accessible electronic formats. We required the IRS to make tax information available to blind people in accessible formats. And right now, we are challenging the University of North Carolina healthcare system to make important healthcare information and medical billing information accessible, and we're waiting for an order from the court. And the NFB has stood up and continues to stand up for the employment rights of blind people, challenging inaccessible workplace technology at Amazon, Comcast, Williams-Sonoma, federal agencies, and others, just to name a few that are kind of ongoing now. And we've challenged the discriminatory attitudes and policies of employers that refuse to hire blind people because of their misconceptions of blindness, such as employers who believe blind people can't be childcare providers or teachers. We've challenged the prejudices that lead government agencies and employers to relegate blind people to segregated subminimum wage workshops, sheltered workshops. And the NFB has stood up over and over again for the rights of blind parents. We take on these cases in the face of state agencies acting on prejudices and stereotypes to try to take children away, in the face of public agencies making uninformed decisions about blind foster and adoptive parents, and in the faces of spouses and courts relying on prejudice to decide child custody. And then the NFB recognizes the crucial importance of education, and its legal program fights discrimination in public education, higher education, testing, and credentialing. Just recently, you've all heard about our case against the Los Angeles Community College District, which went to trial twice and culminated in a verdict finding that LACCD discriminated against students Roy Payan and Portia Mason by failing to purchase and use accessible technology, and awarded the two plaintiffs over $240,000 in damages. The NFB has also reached comprehensive accessibility outcomes with schools like Florida State University and Miami University, but the fight continues. Right now, the NFB and three brilliant blind students are challenging Oregon State University's failure to make course materials accessible. And we're challenging discrimination against blind students by the Harvard Kennedy School and by the Berklee College of Music. So what is it that makes the NFB special and especially effective in advocating for equal rights? I talked to several advocates about this, actually, and it's a combination of factors. One is the NFB is the voice of the nation's blind. The NFB speaks for real blind people and reflects your priorities and principles. It has legitimacy when it sets priorities and takes on cases. And anyone who misunderstands that the NFB is advocating for anything less than justice for the blind does so at their peril. And the NFB is brave. It is willing to take on the biggest companies, the biggest government agencies, including scary ones like the FBI. We will even challenge entities that are supposed to be our allies when they fail to do their jobs, as we did with the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights. And the NFB is willing to use litigation as a tool and to take cases all the way to judgment and even appeal in order to reach binding and precedential decisions. The NFB will not accept halfway settlements that don't actually fix the problem, even if the other side offers cash. And the NFB is not afraid of losing a case. It recognizes, as Dr. Maurer often has said, we may lose the battle, but we don't lose the war because we don't stop fighting until we win. The NFB is creative. It will color outside the lines when necessary, like it did when it intervened as a defendant when the Authors Guild sued the Hathi Trust to prevent digital books from being made accessible to the blind. The NFB takes cases for the right reasons and insists on resolutions that further those reasons. Justice for the individual plaintiffs is important, but the NFB's insistence on public settlements is one of the most important aspects of its legal program. Each decision, settlement, or other outcome is available for others to learn from and acts as a precedent and a deterrent for other entities. And the NFB is bold. The organized blind movement is not going to wait around for somebody else to take on its battles. The blind stand up for themselves and for each other. While the NFB compromises when it makes sense, it doesn't compromise its principles. And as President Riccobono reminds me often, the NFB will not pull its punches. Speaking of President Riccobono, the NFB's leadership is another reason the legal program here is so incredibly powerful. Judges and defendants often push you to accept half measures or to let go of your legal principles, but President Riccobono and the board of directors of the NFB never lose sight of the point of every case. They hold tight to the principles of NFB's mission. And finally, the reason the NFB is such a powerful force is that the NFB is you. You are the real experts on blindness. You are the best clients in existence. You're willing to be plaintiffs and stand up for principles. You're willing to stick it out all the way to get the right result, and you don't give up halfway through. And you are outstanding representatives of the blind community. Your actions and your credibility educate defendants and judges and juries better than any lawyer can. In short, the NFB is extraordinary. I will also note that the NFB has some pretty great lawyers working with Tim Elder, Al Elia, Lauren McLarney, Jesse Weber, Sharon Krever Weisbaum, Andy Freeman, and others is an amazing privilege. I want to leave you with a thought from President Obama that really embodies the NFB for me. Change will not come if we wait for some other person or some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek. Thank you to the NFB for everything you do. Okay?
Nice.
Okay, good.
Very nice.
See, I told you it's good she's on our side. We have also supported Eve for other certain positions, but admittedly, I'm happy they haven't come through so she can continue to work with us. So.